Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the Amwha Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Wildberg, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The Amwha Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm your host, Adam Wilder, and today we've got a great guest. I'm talking about Jonathan Ventura, who spent 35 years in the nuclear enterprise at NNSA and DOE in the labs, and then he retired, and then he went to Montana State University, where he is a career coach, and he's helping to try to meet the national security enterprise's need for talent. And so we thought we'd have him on NucleCast today because we've had a number of episodes of NucleCast. We could actually do an entire series because we've talked to, you know, young people who are interns. We've talked to, you know, younger people who are now in NNSA and DOE. We've talked to, you know, much of the senior leadership at NNSA about how they recruit and retain. We've talked to the Navy about it. So we've done a lot of discussion about this, but we've never talked to somebody who's been on both sides and knows NNSA and then said, okay, I'm going to take that experience and then I'm going to go to the college university side and then I'm going to, you know, help them through that process, help them to understand what they might do and how they might be useful and dispel myths and all that kind of stuff. So with that said, Jonathan, welcome to NucleCast.
Thank you, Adam.
So you're up at Montana State, you're a career coach, and you're building programs to try to bring the best talent into, you know, the nuclear weapons complex and national security more broadly. So tell us, you know, sort of what you're doing and, you know, how is that working out and what are you finding in terms of lessons learned that might be useful for our listening audience who tends to be a more senior group of folks?
Sure. The goal of the university is to help all of its students, both undergraduates and graduate students, find meaningful and meaningful work when they graduate. And as a career coach here at MSU, specializing in national security and the federal government, you know, I sit and I get to take all my experiences both at DOE headquarters, as well as my time at Los Alamos, and help students understand, as well as faculty understand, that there are enormous sets of opportunities for students across all academic disciplines, whether it's, you know, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, chemical engineers, to political scientists, linguists, business majors, that there are opportunities for every single academic major available, whether it's at the national labs, Los Alamos, Lawrence Livermore, Sandia, the federal government, whether it's DOE, the Navy, Central Intelligence. Again, how do we get these kids to think more broadly about the opportunities that exist out there, right? It's, I think a lot of the students recognize that this is a very challenging time for the United States, both domestically and clearly internationally, with what we've seen happening in Russia and hopefully what doesn't happen in Taiwan. But students here are pretty aware. And the other thing that I think helps make the students aware is that the number of veterans here at Montana State is actually one of the largest groups of veterans in any college campus. And so the veterans organization here at MSU is extremely active, and they obviously have the real hands-on experience dealing with national security issues that some of the other students aren't quite so involved in. So part of my job is to get students to think more broadly. The other task I have is to help places like Sandia and Lawrence Livermore recognize, hey, you may not know Montana State University that well, but Montana State turns out an awful lot of really qualified students to go work at your facilities. Los Alamos has found gold here at Montana State. And in the last set of numbers I saw, Los Alamos has recruited and hired more than 120 Montana State graduates to go work at the laboratory. So, you know, my view is, gee, if Los Alamos has hired 120 or more, certainly my colleagues at Lawrence and Sandia and Nevada National Security and Savannah River ought to be taking a look at the students that this institution is producing and start making offers to these kids as well.
Yeah, and I could see for a lot of kids from schools like that, because, you know, early in my career, I taught at a sort of a similar school in the South. And a lot of those kids, and, you know, I went to Alabama, and a lot of those kids, you know, they tend to be patriotic. They tend to be sort of from more rural backgrounds. Yep. And so therefore, they tend to be a pretty good fit for the kind of work and the mindset that it takes to do that vast swath of national security jobs that you've discussed. And so I would think that these kind of schools, and if you take like Livermore, for example, Livermore sort of has a pipeline with Berkeley, and you get right. a lot of folks from Berkeley. And then, you know, if you look here, I live in Kansas City now, you know, KCNSC has a pipeline with they're looking at K-State, you know, Kansas and Mizzou, just proximity. And, you know, the agency and those and DOD tend to hire out of Georgetown. And so you have these sort of pipelines that people look to, but then they often overlook, you know, the schools that are in, you know, the middle of Montana.
Right.
And so, that's sort of, you know, the utility of having you there, I would think, would be your network of folks that you worked with over all those years and understanding the system and then being able to translate that to the students and then say, hey, you know, I've got a really bright cat and he belongs in this division at Los Alamos.
And so you're right. Some federal agencies and some institutions, you know, have very strong relations with other colleges and universities, and certainly not to take away from those relationships. But I would also point out that, you know, for example, the agency was here about a month and a half or so ago and spent 5 days here at MSU. And when the agency is willing to spend 5 days at an institution like this, you know, they're pretty serious about finding a broader set of students to come and work for them. And, you know, I went to some of the all hands that the agency ran here at MSU, and the rooms were full of students. I mean, there were a lot of students who were genuinely interested, and a lot of them, I think it's fair to say, were surprised that there were opportunities for them at the agency. Similarly, we've had Navy Nuclear Lab here several times for, we call them, you know, industry days. We've had an industry day for Los Alamos. We've had an industry day for Savannah River. So we are trying to reach out and, again, give our students, you know, a broader set of opportunities, as well as give, again, my colleagues at you know, Lawrence, Los Alamos, and others the opportunity to come and find a whole new set of talent. And, you know, the university is investing a great deal of money. I should say the state is investing a great deal of money here at MSU. We're in the process of building a brand new high-performance computing, supercomputing building here at MSU, the Gianforte Center for High-Performance Computing, which is literally under construction as we speak. You know, the engineering facilities here at MSU are quite strong. There is space slightly off campus where employers who have classified work that they need help with, the university can help with that as well. We do have both cleared faculty as well as cleared staff, faculty, staff, and students with clearances. So again, if an institution needs some help with some of that work, it can actually be done here at MSU. At both a DOD top secret and a DOE Q level clearance.
Yeah, that's a sort of a rare treasure for many universities. And
exactly.
And then having faculty who know and understand how right. to protect information is can be sometimes a challenge. So, yes. So let me ask if you're going to give advice. So many of our listeners are, you know, senior officers in the Air Force, or, you know, we have contractors and we have DOE and NSA folks. You know, we tend to draw a more experienced crowd at NucleCast. So if you were to give advice to them about success in recruiting, and, you know, recruiting, as we've had these previous episodes where we've talked about it, there's success in recruiting. Their big challenge is at about the 6-year mark, people say, okay, well, I've got the experience, I've got the clearance, I'm now going to go to industry. So what kind of advice can you give people about finding the right talent and the kind of talent that wants to stay?
I think the first piece of advice we tend to give potential employers is make it clear to the student that how important the mission is. If the student understands the importance of the mission, they tend to stay. I think that's number one. Number two, think about your educational benefits, because a lot of students who come out of a place like this, you know, they're seriously interested about a master's degree and a PhD. And then they're trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to pay for this, right? I just spent 4 years. I've spent a lot of money at a university. And it doesn't necessarily mean just Montana State, but, you know, I've spent a lot of money and I have to figure out, how do I afford my next level of education? And what we tell students is, when you think about a job, don't think just about the salary. Look carefully at the benefits, educational benefits, medical benefits, life insurance benefits, all those things that make up the package. So those are the types of things. But I think most important to employers is focus on your message, focus on talking to students in a way that gives them what I like to call the aha moment. They go, now I understand why is this so important, right? And I think, and I'll admit I am biased, but I believe the mission that DOE and NSA is doing on behalf of the nation is incredibly compelling. You know, the work that's been done, you know, up through the end of the last Cold War, you know, kept the nation safe. The challenge going forward is, we have a new set of security threats that the United States has to deal with. And how can you, as that next generation, help preserve freedom and democracy in the United States? And I think most students here would positively react to that message.
Yeah, there's something about, you know, and this is part of, and this may be a challenge that you don't face quite as much. You know, I also went to school at Arizona State. And at ASU, a big school like that, and in many other sort of big schools, most of our engineering students were foreign born. And so bringing them into the national security enterprise was just not an option, you know, because they were not U.S. nationals. And so I wonder if at some of these smaller places and sort of the, you know, flyover country universities, if that is less of a problem. And so there's a lot more opportunity recruit engineers and scientists and all that stuff there.
Right. So we are, you know, as I'm sure most of you know, right, we started as a land grant institution. There aren't a large number of foreign nationals here at MSU. I've seen maybe 10 over my 2+, almost 3 years now here at MSU. So the vast majority of the students are U.S. citizens. And we explained to them that, you know, part of getting a clearance is you have to be a U.S. national. But again, I'd say the vast majority of the students I talk to are all U.S. nationals and are all generally pretty interested. And a lot of them, when I give them my talk about the importance of national security work, they were very surprised that there are opportunities for students without a STEM degree going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that is particularly in the sort of DOE and NSA complex. I'm, you know, not surprised that they're perhaps a little less certain that there's an opportunity for them there. just because they have, you know, they've all seen Oppenheimer and, you know, they sort of understand some broad aspects of what the mission is.
So I will say the movie Oppenheimer has certainly got a lot more students coming to see me. They go, oh, so you worked at Los Alamos, so you know what's going on. Maybe we should talk. And I'm actually seeing a student, I'm seeing a graduate student at noon today to go over her paperwork for, I think, a Lawrence Livermore application. So they're still here. They're still interested, and they're all looking for work.
Yeah. And so talk about what the university is doing, and maybe, you know, for those other universities that may or may not do something similar, tell me about on the university side, specifically what you're doing to sort of help, you know, grow this pipeline into NNSA and the labs, and what exactly are you doing?
So there are multiple things we're doing. So the biggest event that we do twice a year is Career Day, right? So, you know, there's Career Day in the fall, there's Career Day in the spring. Career Day in the fall, we're expecting to see on the order of 300 employers here at the university across all disciplines, from state police to Los Alamos to Navy Nuke to the CIA, you know, sort of a very broad spectrum of employers. You know, 2 weeks out before career fair, we have time set aside for students to come and see us and get them ready for what does an interview look like? What should your resume look like? What might your cover letter look like when you're ready for a cover letter? The university even gets to the point of, we call it Bobcat Closet. So in the event a student doesn't have, you know, a shirt and a tie and a jacket for an interview, the university makes that clothing available for the students so that they're presentable to a potential employer, right? Yeah. Because let's face it, first impressions are lasting impressions. If you show up in a t-shirt and ripped jeans, that may not be the best foot forward when you're looking for a job. So we do that. We even give the students the opportunity for, we call it an etiquette dinner. Okay, well, what does it mean when you sit down for a business lunch or business dinner? That's part of the interview process, right? Again, some of these are first-generation college students who may not be aware that, you know, there's a salad fork and a soup spoon and a dessert spoon. So, you know, the university really tries to give the students everything we can to get them ready for the interviews at Career Fair. We also sponsor, in partnership, again, with, for example, Central Intelligence, Navy Nuclear Labs, Los Alamos Labs, and we'd certainly be happy to do it for other institutions, is we'll bring them on campus. We'll bring those institutions on campus. We'll have them sit down with faculty and staff to talk about what's the mission at Savannah River, what's the mission at Lawrence, what's the mission at Sandia. So have them talk to faculty, because students spend a lot of time with faculty, and faculty can be, you know, important vehicles for encouraging students to think about, you know, what are the career opportunities out there. Then we'll also give the folks from, you know, those labs and plants and other places the opportunity to go into classrooms, talk to students in classrooms, you know, have a pizza, you know, get together at the end of the day so students can have the opportunity to talk to representatives from these institutions, so the students can sort of have some one-on-one time and think about, well, maybe I really do want to work at Savannah River, or maybe I actually do want to go work at Kansas City. I hadn't thought about it, but now that I've talked to folks from these institutions, it's actually pretty interesting work, and maybe it fits really well with my degree.
Yeah, that's so we're at that time of show where I got to take a quick break.
Okay.
But when I come back, I want you to let me know, is there sort of a network of guys like you across universities, or are you sort of a lone ranger doing this work? Or tell me sort of how this works across universities across the country. So you're listening to NucleCast, and we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrent Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back and we're talking to Jonathan Ventura at Montana State University, the Cats. And he's telling us all about his efforts. You know, he spent his career in, of course, at DOE headquarters and at Los Alamos. And he, you know, you were the editor of the National Security magazine up at Los Alamos, because I read that periodically. So I was familiar with it. So, is there sort of a network of people like you, maybe retired folks who say, you know, I want to go live in a beautiful place like Bozeman, Montana, you know, get young kids interested in working at the labs, or do you talk to each other, or are you sort of a one-off and you've sort of created your own program, or how does this work writ large?
So it would be great if there was a network of retired guys across the country working at universities to, again, help students find that job. But as far as I know, I may be one of the few. I mean, I do reach out to my colleagues and friends that I still have, whether they're actively employed at, say, Joint Base Pearl Harbor, or I've reached out to some of my colleagues at both Lawrence and Sandia saying, hey, I've got some really good kids. You really ought to take a look at these kids. And I have sent some kids specifically on to all three of those institutions. I think I'm sort of a lone ranger. And, you know, if any is interested in working at other universities, I'm sure other universities would be grateful for the help. And part of the reason I do it is that I remember how difficult it was for me to find my first job when I got out of graduate school in the nuclear weapons enterprise. And I figured if I can give some of my knowledge to students and make it easier for them, by all means, let me help. Right. And I'm having a dinner tonight with a student who just received his PhD in mechanical engineering. And I believe he's taking a job at IndoPaycom in Hawaii, in part because I reached out to a friend of mine at IndoPaycom and said, hey, Dan, I've got this really great doctoral student in mechanical engineering. I think would be a really good fit to IndoPaycom. And I know that the individuals had, I believe, three interviews. And he said, hey, can we get together tonight? I've got some great news for you. So I think that's what he's going to tell me tonight.
Yeah, that's one of the really important things, is just the networking aspect. Because I remember whenever I had a master's degree and I was like, man, what do I do? I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Right. And so I ended up going back to school to get a PhD because I thought, well, at least if I do that, right, you know, maybe I'll have more opportunities.
Right. And I should say, let me back up for just a second. I think the other aspect of how institutions can attract students is support capstone projects, right? Every student here at MSU has to complete a capstone project. And I know my colleagues at Los Alamos, there are several colleagues of mine at Los Alamos who support between 6 and 10 capstone projects every year. And, you know, again, it gives the staff members at the laboratories, production sites, the opportunity to create a long-term relationship with a faculty member and a relationship with students. And those relationships are really, really important in terms of how do you get somebody, once they're done here, to commit to, you know, San Diego or Los Alamos or Kansas City or Savannah River or Nevada. Right.
Yeah.
And get those relationships established early, you know, make sure students know that their internships, and that's part of my job, is to help students understand, you know, there's a very large internship program at Los Alamos and the other labs, and you students should apply to these internship programs. They will give you insights into what these institutions are like and help you make a decision. Is this a good place for me to work long term, or is this just okay for a summer job? And it obviously gives the laboratories and the production sites and DOE the opportunity to say, I really like that student. We should really aggressively go after him or her.
Yeah, let me second that, because I had a PhD student in mechanical and nuclear engineering at K-State who went to Idaho National Labs and KCNSC and had a couple of other summer internships in the intelligence community and ended up taking an IC job because of that internship. And she sort of knew, you know, I don't want to do this kind of work, but I do want to do this kind of work.
Right.
And so those summer programs, and you get paid, and, you know, it's not sort of money out of your pocket to do it. You're getting paid for it. So you have a great opportunity to go sort of figure out what you like. And then they now know you, like you said, they know you.
Right.
And so therefore you can work through that process, and it's not a blind process anymore. So that's certainly a great thing to do.
Right. And I would point out for employees who are thinking about coming to the fall career fair or the spring career fair, you know, we obviously track how many students actually go to career fair. And so we're seeing anywhere from 1,800 to about 2,400, 2,500 students going into career fair with resumes, ready to talk, and pretty serious about, you know, we want to work, or I need a job, I want a job. And, you know, fall career fair is our largest. Spring career fair runs about 100, 150 employers. But, you know, the fall career fair, you know, again, 300 plus employers, it's a pretty big deal here on campus.
Yeah, for sure. I remember going to one myself whenever I was an undergraduate. So they're important. Okay.
They're very important. And you know, we tell students, you know, we have orientation starting next week for the incoming freshman class, and the provost I work for, one of her talking points next week to both students and parents is, you need to start this process early. It is never too early to write a resume. It is never too early to go to a career fair and start experiencing it and start building up those relationships.
Yeah. You know, I second that. I second that. I've got a 14-year-old who is, he got a job at Chick-fil-A. And we said, hey, before you apply for this job, you got to have a proper resume that,
right.
You know, he's got his own lawn business and he's an Eagle Scout and he does all this stuff. And it's like, man, put that on paper so that people can see you're doing useful, solid things. And then when he went in for the interview, it was, hey, you know, I already know I like you because you're one of the few that does this. So I second that idea. Excellent. Of get a resume, get it early.
Right. And in a couple of years, Adam, have them apply for a position here at MSU.
Well, we're now at that time in the show where I'm going to bring out Bob the Genie. And as I rub my magic lamp, Bob grants three wishes to all of our guests. But you can't ask for wealth or world peace or, you know, youth or any of that stuff. You got to wish for things relevant to our discussion today.
Okay.
So with that, let me ask you, what is your first wish?
My first wish would be to see my colleagues from Lawrence and Sandia Labs show up at Career Fair. I think we have a student population that would fit beautifully with both institutions. That's wish one.
Okay, that's a good wish. That's a good wish. And are your kids, well, they're adults, are your young people, do they have a sense of the, because this is one of the things I find about young people now is they're not used to the sort of level of competition and rigor that is sort of the standard at the labs. Have you gotten any feedback that, you know, to sort of be successful at the labs or having to make a big jump, or are they sort of prepared for the rigors and challenges and high expectations that are sort of the norm at the labs?
So I think the vast majority of the students that I talked to, especially coming out of both the engineering, part of the university and to some extent the business end of the business school of the university, I think they generally are understanding of the challenges and the intellectual rigor. And I do actually spend a lot of time when I talk to students about the rigor and the seriousness of what the labs plural do. And I usually use the annual assessment letter that the three lab directors end up signing. And my point to the students is that, you know, once the lab directors sign their respective letters, there is nobody that can change what the laboratories tell the President of the United States. And I explained to them that, you know, that's a really unique responsibility that reflects on the intellectual rigor and excellence that resides at the three national laboratories. And most students are very surprised by, gee, you guys write a letter to the president and nobody can edit what you tell the President of the United States. I said, exactly. And that is why working at a place like the National Labs is so important.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So wish number two.
Wish number two is that the National Labs continue to exercise, and I know they will, the scientific excellence that the nation has relied on them for the last 70 plus years. The intellectual excellence, the rigor and the vigor of scientific research of the national laboratories is so vitally important to the security of the United States.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Absolutely. How about wish number three?
Wish number three. A good snow season. Oh, does that count? A good snow season here in Montana?
Yeah, yeah. Last year for, you know, I like, that's one thing about great about living in, you know, northern Missouri, northwest Missouri, is that you get four seasons. But last year we didn't get much snow, but I did have the chance to take the kids to the second coldest NFL game in history when the Chiefs played the Miami Dolphins in the playoffs, and the Dolphins were not prepared for that kind of weather. So, so I second, you know, having a good bit of snow.
Yeah.
Cause I'm sure you want to have that time to ski, which, you know, I second that.
And we need the snow not only for skiing, but also to help, you know, obviously the farmers and the ranchers here in the state of Montana, you know, grow the crops and continue to help feed the nation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I don't think of Montana as a farming state per se, just because I think of it being so far north. But,
that's a
good
state.
Point.
Huge yeah. farming state. Right.
Oh. Well, Jonathan Ventura, thanks for coming on NucleCast. It was an interesting conversation because we talk about the needs from the sort of DOE and NSA side, but we never really talk about what's going on at universities and how, you know, like you as a retired lab guy who's sort of said, hey, my second career is going to be helping kids, you know, these college students come into the, you know, the nuclear complex. So that's it's great to talk to you and great to hear what's going on.
Thank you, Adam. It's been great fun.
And of course, thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us on this episode, and we'll see you next time. Well, that was a good, interesting conversation. You know, you don't normally talk on the university side, and particularly with somebody who's spent their career, you know, in the labs. So Jonathan, you know, that's sort of what he does now. So it was a great talk, great discussion. Hopefully it was useful for you. Maybe he had some, you know, interesting things that you can take back and sort of go, okay, this, I think we can help by doing this. You know, if we did that, we've accomplished our mission.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunthal. Follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast. Listen, follow, and review the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.